Hello again and welcome to I've Got a Beatles Podcast with Dave and Chris, and we're here safely ensconced in our homes during the pandemic, and we thought, given the state of the world these days, that we'll keep recording and making as many episodes as we can just to bring you all some Beatle fun to get our minds off of what's happening in the world and also for ourselves. So we've got a whole bunch of interesting topics lined up, and I think today will be no exception. This is going to be very interesting discussion about an album that we've talked about kind of indirectly, but never actually done a deep dive, and that's Beatles for Sale.
Yeah, if you remember way back when in our Agree to Disagree episode, Dave and I get into it over me saying this was the worst Beatles album, and then just a few episodes ago we realized no, that's not true. But we both ranked it next to last. But we've spent a full week listening to it over and over and over again. So maybe we feel differently. Who knows? We'll see.
Yeah. Always put into the bottom category because of the reasons surrounding it, I'm guessing. With the Beatles were very tired and constantly touring at that point. They didn't have much time to write. And so this album, there's 14 songs like the earlier ones, but there's 8 originals and 6 covers, and so it's kind of, people see it as kind of a step back from Hard Day's Night, which you and I ranked very, you know, among the highest of the early albums because of that reason. They're all originals, so it's kind of in the, this is sort of like a seen as a weaker or slump type album, but I'm not sure. I mean, no Beatles album is ever really bad, but I'm not sure it deserves that reputation totally.
Yeah, well, there's a couple other factors to it. One is that it's very unbalanced. A lot of John and the John entries are pretty good right off the bat. Several good ones, and then the Pauls are weak and few and far between. Just not. I mean, if you had to rank Paul's best albums, this would be way low on the list.
It seems like, I think we've said this before too, but John was really, early Beatles was in a way his peak in some regards, because you had Hard Day's Night, which is such a John album and such great tunes on there. And then you get to this and John's stronger, and then Paul's still kind of catching up in a way.
The other thing that I think is a lot of the older American Beatles fans don't really even know what this album is, because it did not exist in the U.S. until the CD releases of the late 80s.
Right.
When they decided, okay, let's go with the original English versions of the 13 albums and we'll put them out as they were in England. A lot of the American versions of, say, Rubber Soul had a couple different less tracks and that kind of thing. And then there were the American albums, particularly Beatles 65 and Beatles VI, right? Six.
Yep.
Beatles 6, I guess.
Mm-hmm.
Which were, it's sort of like this, that what is on this album is kind of split between those albums. So, you know, it's not the most well-known thing in America. In England it's different, obviously, because it, you know, they know the records they got when they were really released, so a little strangeness there, you know.
Yeah, this the release of it and the way it, the configurations. So this do you think maybe part of the problem here, it was really kind of a cash in for Christmas in 1964, because it was released in early December, I believe 4th or 5th of December. And so that's clearly timed for the Christmas market. And the title of it, to me, Beatles for Sale, what is that title? I mean, is that like blatant? We just want your money, or buy our album? Or what do you think? What have you thought of that title, Beatles for Sale?
I kind of like it, you know. I kind of like it along with the sort of tired looking Beatles on the cover, which, by the way, great cover.
Yeah, it is a good cover.
And as iconic as you can get on George's hair there, that onion shape.
Yes.
George's hair. It's really,
really
something else. But I kind of like it conceptually a little bit because it's sort of like, oh, I don't know. There's something a little bit ironic about it. It's sort of like we're just a product at this point, and we're tired. And the album ends with everybody's trying to be my baby, which is sort of like I've always said that would have fit perfectly in Hard Day's Night. Beatlemania is just like exhausting us. So yeah, there's something about the title that I like.
Well, and it's also, you think of what, remember the Who album, the Who Sell Out too. It's kind of in a similar way. Yeah,
exactly. So, and the subject matter, it's still songs about love and girls and stuff like that for the most part, and a bunch of cover songs, but it's a little more gray.
Yeah,
you know, it's a little like, it's a lot about breakup and
more of an edge.
Yeah, more of an edge and more of like, particularly like I'm a loser. Mm-hmm. More like opening up to being like, all right, well, here's how I really feel, you know.
Yeah.
Rather than from me to you,
right,
girl.
Right. A lot of people attribute that to them meeting and having a formative moment with Bob Dylan earlier in the year. And I think you can definitely hear that, certainly on the John songs. You can hear the Dylan influence, as well as just like a little bit of a twang or a little more a country-ish feel or rockabilly or something more than anywhere else. There's rock and roll, obviously, on Rock and Roll Music, of course. But it's more, I think it's a different sound to it. A little more twang in George's guitar particularly.
Yeah. Now, for me, there's no album anywhere that's more like, if I had to rank these songs, I think I would almost rank them exactly how they are. And it just gradually gets kind of, not exactly, but it gradually gets kind of like weaker as the album goes on and really runs out of gas on side two.
Yeah, we'll get into the track by track on the weaknesses, but it does seem to suffer from, I would say, a lack of coherence, or kind of a, like, it seems like it was thrown together to some extent. And if you look at the Mark Lewisohn recording sessions book, there are some one takers here, like Rock and Roll Music was one take, and real quick kinds of rehearsals. They didn't spend a lot of time on these tracks, so it kind of sounds like it.
Yeah, you know how I always go to the Beatles lyrics, the book from Hunter Davis.
Yes.
And he was talking about the album, and he's sort of like, oh yeah, we didn't even rehearse the those were stuff we played on stage, so we just were like, all right, let's get it, the mic set up right, and let's
go. Yeah, exactly.
And just kind of like burn through those. Some of them sound great. Rock and roll music sounds fantastic, but you know, not a lot of effort put into them. And then the originals, we've got some real scattered type stuff.
Yeah.
So we'll get into it track by track here.
Yeah. So that kind of gives you the framework of it. I wanted to, before we get into the track by track, the liner notes here are from Derek Taylor, our good friend Derek Taylor. And there's some of it's kind of cheesy writing, like, oh, the young men themselves aren't for sale. Money, noisy though it is, doesn't talk that loud. But you can buy this album. You probably have, unless you're just browsing, in which case don't leave any dirty thumbprints on the sleeve. But there's a quote here I wanted your take on before we get into it. Many hours and hard days, nights of devoted industry went into the production of this album. It isn't a pot-boiling, quick-sale, any-old-thing-will-do Christmas mixture.
But isn't it?
Yeah.
And many hours. Did they record this in like a few days?
Yeah, pretty much. Like, yeah, in between gigs and yeah.
Yeah.
So I don't know, a little, and then talking about there's no gimmicks here, and This is just kind of the Beatles' straightforward 1964 disc making, and it's though there's little or nothing on the album which cannot be reproduced on stage.
You know, for as much crap as Paul gave the liner notes for Let It Be, pretty much sounds exactly like Let It Be. Like, here it is, the Beatles in their raw form. Here we go.
Yep. Yeah. So it is kind of a, I like Christmas mixture. It kind of is a Christmas mixture. And it succeeds to varying degrees, as I think we'll find out. And then also has some slumps in there, too.
Yeah, I mean, the worst Beatles album is one of the best albums in the world.
Yeah.
So it's not a bad album. Let's just get that out of the way. But we have to be clear-eyed.
Yeah, yeah. Honest with it. Yeah.
And honest with it. So I think this album is... There are certain things about this album that are underrated, and nothing is more underrated to me, Dave, than the first two songs on this album. Back to back, No Reply and I'm a Loser, both John songs. They're almost like a sequence. It's almost like a story.
They fit
almost
well.
Should be played back to back always. Let's talk No Reply first. What do you think, Dave?
It's a great opener, and it's, I think it's really bold for the album to start with just John singing. This happened once before, and there's no music before it. It's just him starting out, and he just draws you in. It's such a story song. I know that he was proud of it because it was kind of or Dick James said it was his first story song, kind of that told a narrative. But it's very, I've always found it very powerful, and in its sadness, they just can't quite get it together, and it's a sad love story. No Reply, I mean, the title right there.
Yeah, and I don't know about, in my way younger days, I'm sure everybody's experienced a thing where you like somebody and then it's like, oh no, oh my god, they're with somebody else.
I
can't even believe it, you know. So
with another man in my place. Yeah,
that's right. So I really love how John sounds on it vocally, and I also really, really love those passionate Paul background vocals.
Oh yeah,
I really died.
Yeah,
like, he really like giving it his all, you know.
Yeah. And it's musically really strong because you've got the good subdued guitar, got the acoustic. It has this album, I think, has a lot of reverb on it. I'm not sure why, but the reverb works on this track pretty well. Mm-hmm. So
I even like the clappy percussion stuff.
There's a lot of clapping here.
Love clappy driving beats, but really like it. Do you like the peppy Anthology 1 demo version, Dave, where they're pretty much laughing through it? Just use your face at the end.
It's very funny. Those are great. Yeah. We would highly recommend listening to your face. Highly recommend the Anthology versions of these tracks that we're going to talk about, and because they were pretty revelatory at the time. And I know I'd never heard them. And they did work on this track quite a bit, and it sounds quite different from what they ended up with. The real version is a little slower, a little darker. A powerful song. And that, I think it really does tie in well to what comes after it.
Yeah, it's sort of like he's lost the girl, and now it's a couple weeks later, and he just feels like a loser. So
yeah,
like,
yeah.
I am a loser. It's sort of a autobiographical Sad John song.
Yes.
In a way. There's a famous line from that 80s Playboy interview where he is talking about this, and he says, "Part of me thinks I'm a loser, and part of me thinks I'm God Almighty."
Right. Right.
I really, really love the little George licks.
Yeah, guitar sounds songs. Great.
Really great. The harmonica solo. A great guitar solo, and it ends in that fade. It just like I really like the music of this one. It's like for a song about being a loser. It's like a real, I can get up and dance.
Pretty peppy. Yeah. It's this one really, and this is certainly not an original comment because many people have talked about it, but it shows the Bob Dylan influence very strongly in the way John sounds. He's a little bit strained in his voice sometimes, and he's got the harmonica and the confessional type of story. When I would teach this song, the students would find it really interesting that loser is kind of has a double meaning. So you've got loser, John is the loser because he lost the girl, but he's also a loser because he's, you know, a loser. Yeah. So you've got a double meaning here of actually losing something and then being a loser yourself. And it gives it even more, that's maybe again more of a Dylan influence or something that a little more serious in its style, but very well done. Tim Riley, who we interviewed for the podcast a couple episodes ago, talks about how he likes John's low range of his voice when he, what have I done to deserve such a fate and realize I've left it too late. That lower, like we don't hear John's low voice too often.
Yeah, he sounds almost good. Can't quite pull it off, but it's sort of like charming.
Yes, yeah.
In a way.
Mm-hmm.
It's like a real natural kind of thing when he gets down there, which is kind of fits with he's kind of revealing his inner feelings.
Right.
You know, so it fits well. I've always loved those two songs. I never, ever have skipped either.
No, both great, great tunes.
Yeah. And but then you know, none of them ever turn up on a compilation or they're barely ever noticed on great Beatles song lists or anything like that.
No,
which it puzzles me because they're both like so great.
Mm-hmm.
I just love them.
Yeah, completely agree.
The next track I also like a lot, and it's grown over on me over the years, and that's "Babies in Black." Dave,
mm-hmm.
what's your thoughts on Babies in Black?
I don't know. I've never really liked this one very much. I appreciate what they're trying to do. I like the waltz or the 6/8, however you feel it. The sad. John always would introduce it by saying, "Oh yeah, this one's a waltz or something." And I like the vocals. It's strong. I like Paul's. It's kind of wailing Paul. Oh, how long will it take till she sees the mistake she has made? Singing. So it's a good musical production. I just felt it drags a little. And I don't like George's guitar solo very much. It's a little sloppy to me.
I could see that. I like the lick at the beginning. I like the music of it. I mean, the chord changes and all that. But I could see that. Hunter Davis says this is John at his most depressive. And he also sort of postulates if maybe this is about Astrid.
Ah, because she would be in black.
Because she would like every. Apparently, not only did she wear black, but like everything in her apartment was black.
And
she's just like obsessed with black.
Yeah, are you a big fan of the lyrics or the story that's being told?
Well, I think it's grown on me over the years, and when it pops up, I like tend to sing along with it a lot.
And I
really like the harmony vocals throughout the whole thing. They both sort of sing the whole thing together.
Yeah, that's true.
Which is kind of a nice
duet,
a nice change of pace from, you know, how most of the songs are. So,
and they did perform this one live a lot. This and actually, I'm a Loser was performed live too. But Babies in Black, it was a good classic kind of Beatles live track where you'd have the two of them on one mic standing face to face singing it. You can just picture it right now. It was a popular track to play, but I don't know. Something about it has always been a little draggy to me.
I feel that a lot about this album, that it feels sort of like, I don't know if I necessarily feel it that strongly about this track, but later in the album, it's just like a lot of these tracks to me are just drag, don't have the energy or the punch
that
they need.
Yeah, yeah.
So not so much for the next track, does have a good punch to it, and that's Rock and Roll Music. Pretty great for a cover song.
Mm-hmm.
Probably my favorite of the cover songs on this album. mostly because John's vocals really, you know, right up there with Twist and Shout and with Stand By Me, and so some of his best performances on vocal performances are on cover tunes.
Yeah.
Know?
Yeah.
And I really think he kind of carries this song with his very passionate.
Yeah.
You know, uplifting what otherwise is sort of a, you know, basic rock and roll song.
Mm-hmm. Yep. So we've got another one take song, like Twist and Shout, like Long Tall Sally, and now this one. And it feels like they're just going for broke on it. So they are giving it a pretty good go. My favorite part is when they're talking about taking a memo and the tango or the mambo, whatever it is, the Ringo does his different drum fills and kind of dum 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 dum. It's got a good sound to it, and he adapts and adjusts to the lyrics. George Martin on the piano, pretty strong performance too. That piano, you can hear those glissandos, all the time. I think this one suffers a little from being overplayed. Now I hear every time I turn on the Beatles Sirius channel, it's on Sirius XM. I always seem to hear this song. I don't know. It's a little tired. But they were huge Chuck Berry fans, and especially John. And it's a good solid cover that you would definitely hear them play live if back in the day. So I'd say the first four songs pretty good, less so on Babies in Black, but otherwise okay. And then we come up to the fifth, which is one of Paul McCartney's earliest songs, called I'll Follow the Sun.
Yeah, I like this song a lot. A very bittersweet tune. Mm. And I think what I like the best about it is the chord changes.
Yes,
the
music.
There's a very cool instrumental Chet Atkins version of this.
Oh.
And I think that really highlights the musical complexity and the very interesting kind of chord arrangement of this. But yes, great example, though. Paul wrote this earlier. He's like, all right, well, we need a song.
Yeah.
He just didn't have, I just feel like, I don't know, that when they went into the studio for this, this is the least prepared Paul's ever been.
Like, he was really winging it. Yeah.
Yeah. No pun intended.
Wow. That's right. Oh.
But I really love the chord changes on this. And so it's a thumbs up for me. You know?
Yeah.
Maybe Ned hasn't, once again, a kind of underrated tune.
Mm-hmm.
Compared to all the other great Paul songs, but I really love it.
Yeah, I'm with you on it, and Tim Riley agrees with you as well, because I've been rereading Tell Me Why after our interview, and so about this one, he says, McCartney's lyricism is in full bloom in I'll Follow the Sun. His deceptive harmonies draw the listener into the gentle mood, unaware that it masks a conceited cheat beneath the surface. Which, with such a gorgeous key layout going for him, no wonder he didn't work on the lyrics. So, yeah, kind of a little slam on the lyrics, but pretty... Oh, what do you have there?
Well, this is the Hunter Davis Beatles lyrics, and I just wanted to read this. He says, it's typical of Paul's upbeat, positive, but also perhaps selfish outlook. Mm. One day I will be off, my love, as I have to follow the sun. John, by contrast, in such a situation, tended to cast himself as the victim.
Yeah.
So.
Yeah.
The lyrics to me are not the highlight. It's the great music.
Yeah, and real short too.
Particularly the chord changes.
Yes.
It's really fantastic.
It's fun to play.
So check out that Chet Atkins version of it. Really great.
Well, here we go. This is.
Should we dial in
Dr. Kid O'Toole?
Kid O'Toole on this one?
Yeah, it's her opinion. She's a big fan of this next cover, which was performed. I listened to it this morning, the cover version, by Dr. Feelgood and the Interns was the original version of Mr. Moonlight. So
yeah, I like that version.
Yeah.
The guitar is good on it. And I like that the idea to do an obscure tune,
yes,
as a cover tune, rather than, you know, their tendency is to do just Chuck Berry tunes,
mm-hmm, and Carl Perkins,
you know, and, yeah, lots of Carl Perkins. We'll hear plenty of Carl Perkins, yeah, later in this episode. But this is sort of a choice, kind of like Anna.
Yeah.
Where,
yeah,
it's like, oh, let's pick a real odd one that only we know.
Or Chains or something. Yeah.
Yeah. This was like a B-side of a song that mostly got attention in England.
Yeah.
So,
right.
So I like that odd cover version. Have you heard the Anthology 1 version of this with the George guitar solo?
Yes, yes.
Apparently just absolutely nixed by George Martin for being too weird. This was an article, I read an article about this on a website called cheatsheet.com, which I'm not sure why they have Beatles articles on there, but Jeff Emmerich apparently said that, yeah, like, oh, he hated, George Martin was like, yeah, that's, no.
No.
We can't. We can't have this weird guitar solo.
No.
It is very strange sounding.
Mm-hmm. Also on the anthology, you hear John trying that scream out a couple times at the beginning and having some trouble and coughing and kind of having issues. What is it about this song that, to me, it just doesn't work? What do you think it is? Or what, in your opinion, what is it that just doesn't make it to the level?
I think they accurately sort of copy the original version, which is sort of like vocally, and for some reason the vocals on that work because it's the voices of the people doing it,
mm-hmm,
that are sort of like, it's sort of like an odd kind of harmony that's like a little flat.
Yeah.
But when they're copying it, they're doing it through their voices, and their voices are sort of like, sound like they're not like how they usually sing, you know,
mm-hmm,
instead of doing a version that accentuates the vocals of the Beatles.
They're
it's like a copy, and which they do a lot on this album, which is why I don't love this album that much. The sort of like, okay, let's accurately kind of copy that version,
yeah,
you know, for that. Plus then you got the organ, which I kind of like the idea of doing the organ, but there's just nothing to it, the solo. It's just sort of like
simplistic.
Yeah, it's a little too like he needed to, I don't know, frill it up a bit or
something. Mm-hmm.
But instead it's just like bum, 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 bum. Okay. There it is. People really hate the organ solo, and they're like, "God, that's the worst thing on any Beatles song." Blah blah blah.
Nah,
I don't think that it's that bad. But I even made a note here. I'm seeing it now. Like odd backup vocals. Paul sounds unnatural.
Maybe that's what it is. They're trying to emulate the original too much. They're trying to be something other than they are in their vocal performance. Yeah.
Begging of you, please. Please.
Yeah, it's. I know it's always up on the list of worst Beatles songs ever. Yeah, it's a skipper for me usually. I don't really like it that much. So.
Yeah, I don't think it's as bad as some other tunes on this.
No.
But I see why people don't like it.
Yeah. Yeah.
And it does sort of repeat. It's sort of, and even the original kind of just sort of like has this sort of repeating kind of drum, and then it turns around and does the same exact thing. It's sort of like not, it, you know, I don't know.
Yeah.
It doesn't get more interesting as it goes on.
No. We've got two covers in a row. Well, three if you want to count the medley as being three. With the Mr. Moonlight, then finishing the side with Kansas City and Hey, 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 which is so doing some Little Richard stuff here. So we just had, we had Chuck Berry, we had an obscure song by Dr. Feelgood, and now we have the usual Little Richard Paul feature here with Kansas City. So, of course, I like Kansas City because I live there, but
Yeah, are you completely clouded by having lived in Kansas City, and so now it's like you can't really see if this is good or not? You're just like, oh, yeah, all right.
I can't.
Like when we saw Paul in Kansas City, played Kansas City, and you're like, all right, yeah.
We were waiting for it. Yeah, I was waiting for it because he had to. It was in the encore. I mean, it had to be done. Screaming Paul kind of goes. Yeah, there's a lot of good histrionics in there.
But I
don't really have much to say about it because there's not really much to it. Just straight ahead rock and roll, and it's Paul's Little Richard thing.
Yeah, as far as the covers songs that they did in their history go, it's not bad. It's up in the upper level of that, which puts it in the lower to high level of all of their songs they ever recorded to me.
Right.
You know, it's sort of like, all right, well, this is okay. This is not bad. It's pretty straightforward. It's pretty standard stuff. They do a good job with it. Mm-hmm. There's nothing, no sour notes, but it's like equal to me to Money.
Yeah.
To, you know, like a lot of tunes like that. It's not like an exceptional cover tune, and it's not bad at all. They do a solid,
and that's very peppy coming after Mr. Moonlight too, which is, that's kind of needed. So it's good sequencing on the album to have a fast track to end the side as we flip it over and go to another original. And this one, I'd say hands down, certainly the most famous song on the album and the one that was the single and very popular. It's on the One Collection, 8 days a week.
Yeah, 8 days a week is an okay song. It probably gets a little more maligned than it needs to. I think the reason it gets maligned is it sort of seems to me to be just like, hey, let's write something that's sort of like A Hard Day's Night. Something like that. Can we find another phrase that's like that? And apparently Paul was in a limo or something, and the limo driver was like, oh, you're real busy these days, huh? Oh, working 8 days a week. And he's like, oh, I never heard that.
Let's write a song.
Great title. John, what do you think of this? 8 days a week. And he's like, yeah, that's fine. Hold me, love me. Yeah, let's write it. Boom. And they wrote it in like 10 minutes. And it was just kind of like,
good idea for a song.
I've had this weird streaming thing happening, by the way, all week long on I have the Amazon Music Unlimited, and all of the versions of 8 days a week out there for some reason have been replaced with the Anthology 1 version, which starts with them going instead of the fade up, the slow fade up, which is a highlight of the tune.
Yeah.
I like the fade up thing I always have. So it's weird that I'm getting this other version. Some people like the Anthology 1 version better. Out there. So what's your take on 8 days a week, Dan?
I've always loved it. I think it's a fantastic cut of early Beatlemania, kind of just has all the elements, including your favorite hand clapping, lots of hand clapping, hold me, yeah, love me. It's got it all in there. I like the fade in, good vocals, good guitar work. It's great. I like there's a little bit of a drone. It's kind of interesting too. 8 days a week, I love you. And you've got someone on Paul or somebody's going just drone, holding the note, so it's kind of a unusual bridge sound to it. But I think it's fantastic. I've always liked the song a lot, and good progression, chord progression, good melodic writing, and real solid. Really, to me, it really stands out on this album.
Oh yeah, well, I think like, you know, certain tracks like that, you can like tell, like it was so obvious that's going to be the single.
Yes.
Like it pops in a way that like Can't Buy Me Love and,
right,
and Help and like certain songs do in their early years, particularly. So, I mean, now we look at it and it's like, okay, is it the most deepest.
No.
You know, is it in my life or anything like that?
No,
you know?
No. It's not even I'm a loser or no reply.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. But as far as a great sounding Beatle hit goes, thumbs up.
Yeah.
Thumbs up. Yeah, and I've always thought it's been a little bit maligned for unnecessary reasons. Just yeah. for like why that? Why malign that? Not from me to you or something.
Yeah.
You know what I'm
yeah,
saying?
Yeah, I don't know it's why.
Like, it's just randomly, they're like, yeah, this one stinks. It's like, what?
What?
I don't get it.
Yeah. So it's a real good starting track for side two. And then we go into, strangely enough, the only Buddy Holly cover that was released on a Beatles album. Now, we know they did a lot of Buddy Holly songs in the BBC albums and yeah. concerts. But this was the only one they actually recorded commercially. And that's Words of Love.
Yeah, this is decent.
Yeah.
It does feel like, you know, it's another example of the, hey, we don't have any songs, let's just do some easy ones.
This is very easy.
And this version of it is too clickety-clackety for me. It's like clicky-clacky, clicky-clacky in the background. It is a highlight of the BBC On the Air Volume 2.
Yeah.
I remember when we talked about that, we were like, oh, this version of that on there was...
It's great.
Sounds great. Particularly their vocals of it. But once again, it's a very very accurate rendition.
Mm-hmm.
If you listen to the Buddy Holly song, it's not like you're going to be like, whoa, what a different...
Right. It's with the track. Same tune.
It's sort of they're emulating that. And once again, it kind of makes it sound very mildly unnatural, kind of like they're just kind of they don't do that on any other tunes.
No.
So,
yeah, I like your word. I call it decent. I mean, there's nothing bad about it. Nothing outstanding about it. It's a good, solid cover of a very simple song. And it's good harmony. I like John and Paul sound great together. One of the other articles or something I was looking at said it's kind of their Everly Brothers moment, or it sort of looks, it's sort of like that sort of feel to it. But yeah, it's slight, maybe.
Once again, John singing very low.
Too. Yes.
Tell me how you feel. Like he's down
there. Tell me how you feel. Mm-hmm.
Yeah. So it just comes off to me, just this particular version of it, like I said, the on-air version, a little bit listless.
A little listless and forced.
And,
yeah.
And it becomes forgettable, which I'm going to use that word a lot.
Coming forward here.
Coming forward with the next side. By the way, this side B, Beatles for shit. Well, we'll get to that. So Words of Love, and that's followed up by Dave's all-time favorite Beatles. In my notes I put, here's where we start to have some bigger issues. and they made the decision, hey guys, let's cover not one, but two Carl Perkins songs.
Because we got to have Ringo do something.
Yeah, we got to have a Ringo. Here's my question. Do we got to have a Ringo? Would there have been people taking to the streets with pitchforks if they had not put a Ringo tune on this album?
There was nothing on Hard Day's Night that Ringo sang, so no, probably not. Honey Don't. I was surprised reading that there were five takes of this. I don't know what else you would do with this track. I mean, it's so pared down and simplistic as it is.
Is your favorite part of the song where Ringo goes, all right, George, please play a solo for me one time here for Ringo, please? And then he plays it, and then he does it again. All right, George Harrison, one more time for Ringo, play a solo, please, a solo. It's not quite, I'm exaggerating. Yeah,
it is.
Like, request a solo twice in the song.
I'd say your one of your favorite words fits this one is listless. The guitar solo that Ringo is pleading for is pretty listless and has like almost beginner guitar solo could do that. You just take two fingers, you put them on the top two strings, and you move up and down. Pretty simple. Yeah. Not much to it. And just, I don't know. I don't know what to say. I don't want to be mean, but it's just kind of
Is it the worst Ringo tune?
The worst Ringo tune.
Similar to the Boys, though. He gives you a little bit of a, where you're just like, well, if you want, I mean, don't.
Yeah, it might be the worst. Because I'm thinking, like, Act Naturally is pretty good. That fits well. And then the rest of them are all really memorable.
He does a fine, you know, Ringo does a fine job with all the Beatles songs that he sings on. So it's not like, it's not Ringo's fault if this is like, sort of like, who cares, but.
Pretty clear filler, I think is the way.
It is pretty clear filler. It's pretty clear. Just the idea, it makes it, just the giving Ringo a tune every album to give Ringo a tune. Now, in later years, he'd contribute to the tunes.
Yes.
It'd really be, you know, Octopus's Garden, for instance. Or, you know.
Don't Pass Me By.
And... Yeah. There's, it's like, it's less of a novelty.
Mm-hmm.
But this makes it feel like at this point of their career, it's like, okay, let's give one to Ringo, and it's this cover song, and it's not a very good song. And
yeah.
He can handle it because its range is within a, you know, few notes.
Yeah.
makes it feel like, oh, there's a little bit of that novelty act.
Yeah. Yeah.
Kind of thing to them, you know?
So, yeah. That makes sense.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Every Little Thing comes up next, Dave, and I want to read you from Hunter Davis again, and this is probably my favorite thing he's written in the whole book. This track came as a surprise to me. Playing it now, I realized I didn't know it and had no memory of having heard it back in the 60s. Little wonder, I suppose, as it is highly forgettable, a bit of a dirge with a lackluster beat and poor words. Every little thing the girl does, she does for him. Paul told Barry Miles in his 1997 biography that he had written it in his bedroom in Wimpole Street with Jane in mind as a love song, but it can't have thrilled her much. It certainly would not today, given the implication that it's a girl's duty to serve her man.
Ooh.
So Hunter Davis does not like this.
No. Every little thing she does for me. Yeah, I didn't think of it that way. That's true.
It is definitely, if you were listing Beatles songs off the top of your head, if you ask anyone, name some Beatles songs. How long do you think you get till they mention Every Little Thing?
Probably till like maybe number 198 or somewhere like that, somewhere way down the list.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Definitely not a big memorable winner that everybody talks about. That's for sure. The drum turn is not great. The guitar is pretty pedestrian to me. It is unusual, though, for a couple of things. One, it's a Paul song, but John singing. Does that happen? Does that happen anywhere else that you can remember? I think we'd really have to think it through.
Yes. Yeah. No, I can't think of anything off the top of my head. That is strange. It's a Paul song, but John gets the lead vocal on it. Yeah.
Yeah. I think that maybe, do you think they should have tried that more? Because some people mention, like, for instance, I think John mentioned in some interview, oh, I should have definitely sang Oh Darling.
Yeah, that was John saying
that's
that.
That's for me. I should have sang that. I would have been perfect. But instead, he has to do it because he wrote the damn.
Yeah.
Which I think they got more and more possessive like that as time went on. So it's sort of refreshing that Paul wrote it and it's John singing it. But
yeah.
Then again, maybe that messes it up. I don't know.
Yeah. It's a strange, it is kind of a strange song that does go under the radar. It, to me, it's got two kind of quirky things about it. It's got the timpani, which on the chorus, boom, boom, which is kind of a interesting touch. And then I have to say, I do like George's guitar sound. I don't know. I haven't looked at Walt Everett's book to see what he has on it, but it sounds like there's a little flange or something. Do, 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 do. It's got a nice sound to it. Now, a little guitar solo, too. So that stands out for me. But apart from that, it's kind of like, I don't know, does it maybe strike you as Hold Me Tight-ish or Tell Me What You See? Kind of these ones that just really are just competent, but, you know, fall under the radar completely.
Yeah, it just doesn't. It's just very, it's among the most forgettable. It's among the least put a lot of effort into making it great, making something stand out about it. A lot of the tracks that, I mean, they probably thought that they had it with, like you said, oh, well, we've got a more interesting guitar sound here. So that's mm-hmm. You know, oh, and there's some timpani on this instead of just regular drums. Great. Got it.
We got it.
I don't think they got it.
No. You know. No. Now, the next song, I'm going to start this one because I'm going to stick up for it because I have a feeling you're going to be not so happy with I don't want to spoil the party, but I've always had a soft spot for this one because I think George's guitar solo is terrific, and he nails it. It's country-ish. It's got good harmony, and George sounds great on this track. It's a little bit of a dragger too with John's lyrics, or it's kind of a darker, I don't want to spoil the party, so I'll go. I'd hate my disappointment to show, that kind of a sound to it. But I think it's not the greatest song, but I think it's a pretty good song. And it's strengthened by the music.
Well, maybe I'll surprise you here. I did put my notes where guitar sound is pretty interesting.
Mm.
Once again, I do think we're getting to the point where George really gets some really great guitar sound.
Yeah.
So there's that, and particularly the beginning of the tune, I really like the guitar intro.
Yeah.
And I also really like the harmonies on it. They're intriguing to me.
Yeah. So, tonight she's made me sad.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. So otherwise, kind of a little bit. It just has a feel of kind of being phoned in, just where it's at, and there's so many sort of mid-tempo, kind of listless tunes in a row.
Mm-hmm.
So, but I think if you popped it off of here and then threw it onto some other album, it might work a little differently.
Yeah. Yeah, that's a fair point.
Experiment with that, like mix around, throw it into a playlist and mix it around a little bit and see how it feels like coming after a different mm-hmm. tune or something. But it's certainly better than the track before it or the track after it.
So, yes, going on to track 13, this is a Paul song, What You're Doing, and it's kind of an early Paul throwing everything in arrangement here, because you've got the drum solo going at the beginning, and then you've got the actual song, and then it stops, and a little bass solo, kind of has everything in it, but not successfully in a lot of ways.
Yeah, first off, the whole drum intro thing, isn't it just, it sounds like a total ripoff of Be My Baby to me.
Oh, yeah, yeah. Think of it that way.
Mm-hmm. Sort of the intro to Be My Baby and the intro to this are kind of simpler, similar.
Mm-hmm.
I find this track to be wall-to-wall weak. the guitar sound, real tinny in this one. Real tinny. Ding, 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 ding. You know, the lick is good, but it's just like the sound is too thin.
He's playing it on the 12-string Rickenbacker, which is kind of not meant to be a powerful sound in this way.
Yeah. And then these background vocals were like, look. Hi.
Shouty.
Yeah, it's like, what are you doing?
Yeah.
Please. I just don't like the background vocals at all on that. And then, take 11 is floating out there. You can find mm-hmm. that. And there's less of that pronounced backup vocal. It might be just a little bit of a better take. But it's kind of like there's not much I've been waiting here for you. Anticipate, you know, it's just like there's nothing, like the lyrics aren't that interesting.
Yeah.
And once again, it's sort of, compare this to No Reply. No Reply, he's realizing and having a real emotional reaction to what's happening to him, and it's sort of happening to him in real time, and he's having a genuine emotional reaction. This is sort of like, it comes off as sort of like whiny. Mm-hmm. Sort of like, what you're doing to me.
Yeah. But
there's no weight to it. There's no like emotional stakes to it, really. Like, you're doing this to me. I'm the important one.
Yeah. Yeah.
It sort of comes off to me like, did you even like this girl that much? Like, in 2 weeks, you'll be over this girl.
Not a lot of commitment here.
Yeah, no. Yeah. You!
Yeah. Got me crying! Another one that sort of slips by, and although they seem to have some problems recording it, according to the Lewison book, so it seemed to have some trouble. Do you like George Martin's honky-tonkish piano in there during the solo?
I do like that. I do like that. That's pretty interesting. There's a little bit of the musical stuff on this. Once again, I just think if they wouldn't have botched the backup lyrics and hate the drums, I really don't like that.
Boom.
Yeah. Tonight we met. That's the song I want to hear.
Instead, you got.
What you're doing. Apologies to all the huge What You're Doing fans out there clamoring for What You're Doing, dying for Paul to play What You're Doing on tour. You don't hear about it hardly at all, ever.
No.
Because
no.
It's so weak.
Well, speaking of weak, how about the way to close this album here with another Carl Perkins? Because notice we haven't heard from Beatle number 4 at the moment here. We haven't heard from George yet. So here's George on Everybody's Trying to Be My Baby. And with some serious amped up reverb at the beginning here. That sounds like he's singing in a cave or a tin can or something. I've always felt this is pretty phoned in.
Yeah, it's not my favorite song, although I did like I was saying before, if you just take the subject matter, like, it would have been perfect for A Hard Day's Night.
Yeah, that's true. That's true.
Like, why they didn't have it, I guess they had all originals in it.
Yeah.
So, but if they had a cover song that perfectly fits the year of the Beatlemania, where they're getting chased around by girls,
right,
and they're world weary because of it, you know, then it is a good choice because of that, because
they had 19 dates.
That's right. But I once again, I feel like it's straight up similar to the Carl Perkins version.
Mm-hmm.
It's like, oh, we got to copy that Carl Perkins. By the way, how does Carl Perkins get away with calling this his song when there it's like the chorus end of here's reading from this is reading from Wikipedia on Everybody's Trying to Be My Baby. It borrows from a song with the same title, chorus and verses, written in the mid 1930s by Alabama born country songwriter Rex Griffin. How the hell does that how on earth did they have to credit Carl Perkins? But Carl Perkins just like straight up steals a song, which, by the way, you can hear that Rex Griffin and a Roy Newman 78 Western swing version, which are all both very, like, very kind of cool sounding.
Hmm.
But they're from the 30s and they sound the same song. What is going on? I don't understand this.
So,
you know? So I don't understand how Carl Perkins gets away with it, but the Carl Perkins version, despite that,
yeah,
pretty good,
mm-hmm.
Pretty great. But I guess as a closer, it works.
It's kind of Dizzy Miss Lizzie-ish, kind of. You got that
yes.
that cover yeah. ending song on the album, Yeah, it's a screamer. Well, George, as much as he can scream doing it.
This has to be side B of Beatles for Sale. If we took out the orchestral side of Yellow Submarine, we forgot about that.
Yes.
This has to be the worst side, right?
I'd have to think about that. Maybe that's a good subject for an episode, to look at the weakest and strongest Beatles sides that we could come up with. Because I think I'd have to look a little more carefully. I'm thinking of the early albums, like With the Beatles, or if there's, or Let It Be, maybe has some, if you've got Maggie May and Dig It, and I don't know. I'd have to look, but you're pretty, you're pretty close, I think.
If you go back and listen to our discussion on the agree to disagree, where I'm trying to convince you that this is the worst Beatles album, I believe I said Words of Love, Honey Don't, Every Little Thing, I Don't Want to Spoil the Party, What You're Doing, Everybody's Trying to Be My Buddy, all duds. And you go, no.
All duds.
But I don't necessarily think they're all duds, particularly having spent some time with them all. But what you doing?
Well, here's an intriguing question for you. So there was a cover song that was recorded at the same time for this session, or for this album, and it was on Anthology 1 called Leave My Kitten Alone.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah. Could that have been substituted for any of the cover songs, at least to improve your opinion of the covers? What do you think?
I'm not sure. Maybe.
That's a pretty good rocker, right? That's pretty.
Yeah.
Yeah. I mean, you could replace Mr. Moonlight, or Everybody's Trying to Be Mel, and then George wouldn't have a song.
That sounds like John is like would probably be like, you know what? We're not putting a song that says kitten.
Yeah, that's true.
On that. That is not cool.
Not cool. No.
Cool enough.
No. So that, fortunately, that didn't get out until Anthology 1, but it's a strange album, I think, as we kind of sum it up here. It's very strange.
It just the lack of good McCartney material.
Mm-hmm.
And then it's like, it's okay, who's the lead singer of these? Lennon with a little McCartney in the background. Lennon, then McCartney, then Lennon, then McCartney, and then it's a lot. Side B is a lot of like 8 days a week is sort of both of
mm-hmm.
them.
Mm-hmm.
Words of Love is kind of both of them, so it's just like all unbalanced. It's very, almost like it, all over the place, you know.
Yeah.
So, once again too, like we were talking a lot about it being like listless and weak, and the second side, the first side being kind of like, oh, real underrated. Oh, that one's underrated. Oh, I like that one. You know.
Mm-hmm.
So.
Yeah, I mean, if you had to pick, let's say, the top three songs from this album, what would you say that we could extract from them?
Well, definitely No Reply, I'm a Loser, 1-2 for me.
Yeah.
And then I'll probably go with I'll Follow the Sun.
Oh, interesting. Uh-huh. Yeah, I'd probably take the first two and then throw in 8 days a week just because of the way it's the most poppy song on the album and the real single. And interesting, Derek Taylor says in his liner notes that the Beatles, at least three of the Lennon-McCartney songs, were seriously considered as single releases when John popped up with I Feel Fine. These three were 8 days a Week, No Reply, and I'm a Loser. Each would have topped the charts.
Yeah.
I don't know.
I mean, it would be interesting to me if, say, I Am a Loser was the single and top the charts or something like that. Would that be considered like one of the best Beatles? You know, it's like,
would it raise in its estimation?
Yeah. Because I feel like it just like these got lost, you know?
Yeah.
So
maybe they got lost because they're on an album that's that is very inconsistent and that has a lot of, I think that's kind of the point we're making here, that it's doesn't cohere very well because of these covers and because of the quickly written originals.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And once again, like if you think about A Hard Day's Night, excellent album,
yeah,
start to finish, and all originals.
Mm-hmm.
And then you've got this album with a lot of these, you know, honey don'ts of the world. And then the next album's Help, which is very, very, very solid.
Yeah.
And you know, has Yesterday on it and has Help on it. And, you know, it's just like Ticket to Ride, and, you know, like,
oh, yeah. So You're Gonna Lose That Girl. I mean, yeah, lots of great songs.
You've Got to Hide Your Love Away, which yeah. is like one of a gem, you know. And then that's followed by Rubber Soul. So it's like,
and we're off and rolling from there.
Yeah, yeah, exactly. So it's like we're in the progression of the Beatles. It does feel like kind of a half step back.
Mm-hmm.
Maybe there is some progression as far as like the No Replies, I'm a Losers, Babies in Blacks.
Musically, you know, musically and lyrically, some in some places from John.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. From John and from George's guitar,
mm-hmm.
you know, some of the production type stuff.
Yeah.
You know, the fact that they were kind of like starting to mix it up, sounds wise,
mm-hmm.
you know, so it has its place in history and it's, you know, but it's not, if you're like, what's the most important Beatles albums? Like, whenever we're going to talk about an album by looking at the Beatles anthology, the book.
Yeah.
And it was hard to find.
Oh, they didn't say much about it.
The page. What about
the page?
Whereas, try to find, say, Sergeant Pepper in there. You're gonna find a lot of pages. Like, so you know, it is what it is. But
yeah,
and it for that reason, it'll always be the sort of obscure, more obscure album.
Mm-hmm.
Worst. Yeah. You know, I mean, we said the few weeks ago was Yellow Submarine, so I think we'll have to stick with that.
But we'll stick with that. And I mean, this is, yeah, there's definitely some progressions forward, but it's very much a kind of a product of its time in the Beatles career where they're in between a lot of things and starting to make that move forward in the next year and had to get something out for the record company, and this was it. And some good tracks and some other weaker things, and that's, yeah, kind of how it goes. So if we want to give it a rating overall out of 10, 6?
Yeah, I think I got to go 6, yeah.
Yeah.
So.
Yeah.
It's been interesting listening to it and only it for
yes.
the experience I've ever had before, you know, yeah. spending that much time with Beatles for Sale.
Are you a little tired of Honey Don't?
I tell you, I'm just so tired of What You're Doing. Time that came on, I was like, oh no, here we go again.
Well, let us know what you think on our Facebook page or by email at ivegotabeatlespodcast@hotmail.com. Let us know your opinions on Beatles for Sale and where you think it fits in the catalog and how you see it in the Beatles progression towards where they would go. Because really, like you're just saying, from then on, there's not really a dud. I mean, they're all absolute must-haves after that.
Yeah.
So
yeah,
pretty, it was kind of the last one it was the last one with lots of covers, I guess. And I mean, Help had some covers, but this is these are like thrown together covers.
Yeah, slapdash.
Slapdash, yeah, good word for it. So are we totally off base? Tell us if we're being harsh here. So let
Maybe.
Us know.
I mean, a lot of people think we're harsh no matter what. It's like, yeah. Oh, yeah, you know, you guys hate, you're not fans, you
yeah,
hate
I know.
Everything. You know, yeah. What a jerk.
I think you're going to get
that's
it.
That's just me they're talking about.
That's right, you're going to get it for What You're Doing on this one. So. So anyway, that's
just wanted to mention quickly a couple pieces of news. One is they did had some news in our last episode. They did reschedule the Fest for Beatles Fans.
Yes, it'll be over John's, what would have been, can you believe this, his 80th birthday?
Wow.
Yeah, it will be Ringo's 80th birthday.
And then we recorded, and then the very next morning, we got a huge piece of Beatles news, which is the Peter Jackson Beatles documentary now has a release date and a title. And it's going to be called The Beatles Get Back, and it'll be released in theaters, assuming, knock on wood, goes well. Right now, everything's shut down. There's
might be released on Netflix.
Maybe, or Disney Plus, yeah, I guess, because it's a Disney film,
right?
And it's The Beatles Get Back, and it will be released on September 4th. So I know it's been a rough year for everybody, continues to be a rough year for everybody. And we are thinking about everybody. We hope you're in great health. Hope you stay away from people for a while and just stay in and stay safe and let this thing blow over. A great reward will be this Beatles documentary.
Yes.
I'm sure as we get closer to that, we'll have some more information. And we'll try to do another news episode next month, and just if there's any other details about the release. I know there's supposed to be a book. I'm sure there's going to be
box set
and all kinds of stuff like that.
Yeah.
So as we get to know a little bit more of those details, we'll share them with you.
We will be back at you soon with another episode. And stay safe. Take care.